If we delay him unduly by constantly recalling him to contact with the earth plane, we expose him to the worst evil that can possibly befall him, the state which, by occultists is called death in life and by spiritualists, earthbound. Normally, if left to its own devices, the soul will eventually succeed in reaching the further bank, but it is in our power to help greatly in that process in the way indicated. Chapter 15, How the Adept Meets Death. It is a maxim of the path that those who have overcome are known by their serenity. The adept dies, as he has lived, serenely. Death has no terrors for the man who knows the actuality of reincarnation through his own memories of past lives. He has died many times before and the process is familiar to him. He is accustomed daily to withdraw consciousness from the brain and enter into the higher self in meditation. He knows that the time has now come to go out through that familiar gate and close it behind him, returning not again. Through long years of discipline upon the path to adepthood he has been laying up treasure in heaven. He is accustomed to think of himself as a spirit, not as a physical body. For him the body is but an observation post which he has constructed for himself upon the plane of earth. He knows that the call to withdraw has come to him for one of two reasons. His physical body may be no longer a serviceable machine, and it is better and cheaper to scrap it and get a new one than to patch up that which is past repair. Or it may be that he has completed his task upon earth and is summoned to go up higher. He accepts death freely and without cavilling, for he knows that if it were not his master's command that called him forth, all the powers of death and hell could not prevail to drive him out of his habitation of flesh. 92 As he awaits the processes of the body that shall open the gates to him, he sinks deeper into meditation, seeking to distill the essence of life's experiences, observing the lessons it has set him, noting those he has learnt and those which are as yet imperfectly acquired, and striving by intensive effort to complete his realization of those lessons before the time comes for his departure. Soon he will know whether he has completed his task or whether he is destined to return to earth again to finish his work. If he finds that earth life is not yet finished for him and that he is to return, he will bend his energies to the task of constructing the archetype of the etheric mold which is to give form to his body and direction to his destiny. When he comes once more to earth, he endeavors to engrave upon the seed atom the memory of the mysteries wherein he has been initiated, thereby surrounding it with those trailing clouds of glory with which the initiate soul is invested when it passes out once more through those gates, which when seen from above are the gates of birth and when seen from below are the gates of death. Clearly and persistently he formulates his ideal so that his soul, when it goes forth, shall be directed towards its goal and not wander aimlessly in the other world. He knows that within a cycle of three lives he has complete free will. If this life has borne the fruits of past endeavor, then he may count with reasonable certainty upon the next life, seeing the achievement of his aim. As soon as he finds that his grip upon this life is loosening, the adept is preparing for the next life. 93. For the adept, there is no parting from those he loves. He has long learnt to love the spiritual essence of each soul, and the loosening of the silver cord and the breaking of the golden bowl mean to him the casting down of the barriers that separate him from perfect union with that which he loves in each one of those dear to him. Which is best, to be in physical touch with those whose souls are remote from us through lack of sympathy, or to be in a spiritual union of perfect sympathy and understanding with the real, die immortal and indestructible higher self of one dear to us? The former is the real separation, not the latter. Those who have their higher consciousness can commune together independently of the body while they are still in this earth life, and death only increases their faculty of communication. They are far closer to each other spiritually when there are no longer any barriers erected by the limitations of the body. When the time comes for the adept to set forth, he summons to him those who are dearest that they may ease his parting and companion him upon the first stages of his journey. Those who can come in the flesh gather about him, those who cannot, come thither in the astral projection, and those who have gone on ahead through the great gates are summoned also that they may return and await him upon the threshold. The magic circle is drawn about him, sealed at the four quadrants with the names of the four mighty archangels, and candles burn at head and foot. All sit silent in meditation while the dying man treads once more the path of withdrawing, the path of symbol vision that he has trodden so often when rising on the plains. 94. As he withdraws, the gates swing softly for his passage, and those who are watching see in the spirit vision the coming of a mighty one to meet him. The archangel of his order, a light shines about the bed like the last ray of the setting sun darting from under a cloud, clearly visible even to the physical eye, and the soul of the adept is gone. It is the promise of the mysteries to their initiates that they shall go in full consciousness and be met by the great initiator. It is also the privilege of those of his brethren who companion the initiate upon his last journey that they, too, shall stand upon the threshold and look beyond into the hereafter and see for themselves the path they will follow when their time comes. The End. First published 1930. About the author. Dion Fortune is the pen name of Violet Firth, one of the most mysterious and significant figures of the British esoteric tradition of the early 20th century. Born in Llandudno, Wales, in 1890, she exhibited strong psychic tendencies even as a child. She decided at an early age to pursue a career in nursing, wished her to an interest in human psychology. She became an early Freudian, but soon saw the limitations of psychoanalysis and pursued the deeper implications of human psychology in occult and magical traditions. Raised on Christian Science, gravitated first toward Theosophy and then to the Order of the Golden Dawn, where she became an initiate and received the hieratic name of Dea Non Fortuna, which eventually became her pen name, Dion Fortune. In 1922, she formed her own esoteric society, the Society of the Inner Light. Dion Fortune's legacy is her writings, both fiction and non-fiction. In non-fiction, her books Psychic Self-Defense, The Mystical Kabbalah, Through the Gates of Death, and Esoteric Philosophy of Love and Marriage still stand, 75 years later, as the premier statements on their respective subjects. More. Dion Fortune, born Violet Mary Firth, the 6th of December 1890, the 6th of January 1946, was a British occultist, Christian Kabbalist, ceremonial magician, novelist and author. She was a co-founder of the Fraternity of the Inner Light, an occult organization that promoted philosophies which she claimed had been taught to her by spiritual entities known as the Ascended Masters. A prolific writer, she produced a large number of articles and books on her occult ideas and also authored seven novels, several of which expound occult themes. Fortune was born in Llandudno, North Wales, to a wealthy upper-middle-class English family, although little is known of her early life. By her teenage years she was living in England's West Country, where she wrote two books of poetry. After time spent at a horticultural college, she began studying psychology and psychoanalysis at the University of London before working as a counselor in a psychotherapy clinic. During the First World War she joined the Women's Land Army and established a company selling soy milk products. She became interested in esotericism through the teachings of the Theosophical Society, before joining an occult lodge led by Theodore Moriarty and then the Alpha et Omega occult organization. She came to believe that she was being contacted by the Ascended Masters, including the Master Jesus, and underwent transmediumship to channel the Master's messages. In 1922 Fortune and Charles Loveday claimed that during one of these ceremonies they were contacted by masters who provided them with a text, the Cosmic Doctrine. Although she became the president of the Christian Mystic Lodge of the Theosophical Society, she believed the society to be uninterested in Christianity, and split from it to form the Community of the Inner Light, a group later renamed the Fraternity of the Inner Light. With Loveday she established bases in both Glastonbury and Bayswater, London, began issuing a magazine, gave public lectures, and promoted the growth of their society. During the Second World War she organized a project of meditations and visualizations designed to protect Britain. She began planning for what she believed was a coming post-war age of Aquarius, although she died of leukemia shortly after the war's end. Fortune is recognized as one of the most significant occultists and ceremonial magicians of the early 20th century. The fraternity she founded survived her and in later decades spawned a variety of related groups based upon her teachings. Her novels in particular proved an influence on later occult and modern pagan groups such as Wicca.